Heyo, welcome to Mostly Max and Other Things. I am the aforementioned Max, and welcome to another week of this here thing. I hope everyone is staying healthy and warm, because apparently we're in the false spring portion of spring here in New York, and it's cold as fuck, so I hope you're staying warm. So, let's get into it. First and foremost, rest in internal power to icon, legend, and my frat brother, Harry Belafonte. He passed on Tuesday at the age of 96. Kind of like the good example of a life well lived. He called a thing, even if it was a detriment to his career. And he didn't give a shit because he was fighting for the freedom of everybody. Rest in peace to that gent. Rest well. I hope you and Sydney are having a key down to the heaven bar or whatever. Anyhow, moving on into the real bullshit. After Fox had to come off of $787 million in a settlement, which I knew was going to happen, by the way, with Dominion voting systems, they sent sentient pile of assholes, Tucker Carlson, to the fade on Monday. So he holds the record of being fired the most from all of the main cable networks. He got booted off of MSNBC. He got booted off of CNN after John Stewart ethered the fuck out of him and his stupid little fucking bow ties. He stopped wearing them shits and then moved on to Fox, where he talked the cashiest of shit and the most, how can I put it, lying ass way for money. Because obviously, since all the tea on him came out during the defamation suit, that Dominion was absolutely going to win. He was talking shit about the Rat King. It's possible that, you know, the Rat King might have asked for his head for talking all that cash on those text messages. Maybe it could have been about a producer that worked on his show that's suing the brakes off of Fox because he kept a wildly toxic workplace, which tracks. Look how smug that little bitch is. You know, he ain't never been punched in the face. But it also could have just been strategy, which is probably the real thing, to kill off a big fish to feed the board of directors, you know what I'm saying, to staunch the bleeding. Because that's 787 milli, that's 7 months of money. So I feel like maybe they cut off a little bit of the fat, because that was a lot of money. A lot of that money was going to Tookums. Oh, well. Bloop. Fuck that fucking shit heel. Also, CNN booted Don Lemon after 17 years. And he felt away, as you could imagine. Good luck to both of them. Because one of them probably already has a podcast up and running, is probably taking meetings with like Newsmax and OAN right now. Don is probably drunk as fuck at this very moment. They didn't even let him get fucked up for New Year's one last time. Trash. Anyway, sorry to both. Well, sorry to Don. Even though he brought that shit on himself, he was talking the dumb shit. Talking about how bitches over 40 are past their prime and all this shit, and talking the dumbest fucking nonsense. You know how Don was when during the Obama years, and then he got radicalized during the Trump years and was getting piercings and shit on TV and live and fucked up every New Year. What a time. Well, he's still rich, so who gives a shit? He'll be fine. Anywhooza, moving on. Prize from the Fugees is going to the Bing. And I'm quoting here from the Washington Post. Praz Michel, who found meteoric fame in the 1990s as a member of the short-lived Grammy Award-winning hip-hop trio, the Fugees. First of all, tell me you're white and don't know what the fuck you're talking about without telling me you're white and don't know what the fuck you're talking about. The Fugees wasn't short-lived. Anyhow, He was convicted today, as of my recording on Wednesday, of 10 federal crimes for his role in a tangled conspiracies, including money laundering, campaign finance violations, illegal lobbying, and witness tampering. After deliberating for 2 days, a jury in the U.S. District Court in Washington found Michelle guilty of all the charges against him, including lying to banks in a convoluted case arising tangentially from one of the world's biggest financial scandals, the looting of a $4.5 billion from Malaysia's sovereign wealth fund called 1MDB. The 50-year-old former rap star, who sat impassively as the verdicts were announced, was not accused of participating in the gargantuan theft. The charges he faced stemmed from his association with the alleged architect of the embezzlement, a wild spending, lavish partying Malaysian financier named Low Tech Joe. I'm just going to call him Joe Low because I ain't got it. Who is a fugitive from justice? Yeah, since they couldn't get Joe Low, they clapped him, Praz, and this other dude who was also in on the grift. He looking at 20 years, but he ain't going to get all that. But apparently, in his dealings with that cat, he pulled like $100 million, stretching from criminal conspiracies, stretching from Malaysia to Washington, from Thailand to Hollywood. Yeah, they had like Leo DiCaprio on the stand because he was in cahoots with the dude. I think he got financing from him for some movie. They had Kim Kardashian in there because... sure. And they had, like, I think Martin Scorsese got pulled into this shit. Mass Honey. Anyhow, he's looking at 20 years. He could get less, though, based on the sentencing guidelines. But I'm not going to hold my breath because if they can't get Joe Low, they binging somebody. They binging somebody. And who better than Praz? That boy, 50 years old, about to go to jail. Sorry to that man. Anyhow. Moving on. Justice Ruckus is not the only one getting their bribery on at the SCOTUS. Neil Gorsuch got aired out this week for selling property to the CEO of a big-ass law firm that stays with business in front of the court. Yeah. Apparently, just after he got onto the court, you know, through lying and chicanery and the Heritage Foundation, just after that, he sold a property that he owned with some cats in an LLC. Unlike Justice Ruckus, though, he did report the money, you know, but he didn't say what all. He reported the income, but he ain't going to specifics like they supposed to about where that came from. And because he bought he sold the shit through an LLC, it gives cover to any kind of shenanigans and grifting that might be going on. That's the reason why, you know, real estate is popping as a grift. Mad money getting washed. Anyway. Nothing's going to happen. It don't even matter. So Senator Dick Durbin, in response to Justice Ruckus's bullshit, subpoenaed Chief Justice Roberts to come in and talk to the people about all that grifting on the Supreme Court in front of the Senate, instead of just asking Justice Ruckus directly because he thought he would say no. Of course, he's going to say no. Like... those bitches are untouchable, essentially, and y'all are not going to change no rules, and y'all ain't got the votes to get nobody impeached off that bitch. So, yeah. Anyhow, Justice Roberts said, nah, I'm good. Thank you. But why wouldn't it have made sense to just subpoena Justice Ruckus out the gate directly and tell that motherfucker come through so the bitch could say no, and that would be the story, and then you could build on that? By saying, you see, these bitches are lawless. You see what I'm saying. And also, when they subpoena these motherfuckers, why they don't, I know why, but why they don't treat them like they would treat some street motherfucker who got subpoenaed for some shit and just was like, nah, I'm not going. They go send the people for those motherfuckers. I don't understand why you get to ask all politely to these hoes about coming through to answer some motherfucking questions. Send the people. Like, the fuck. Anyway. That's what happened. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And also, Democrats, they like to lose. Anyhow, moving on into some more bullshit. Mayor Clown Shoes walked past walk past. I wish he would walk past the fucking Gracie Mansion and walk into the sea. Mayor Clown, she's walked back to his plan to basically defund the city's libraries after already clearing the schools and homeless services to buy more like robot dogs and shit and other toys for the cops. I guess because of the pushback, everybody went nuts, but people like their libraries here because people read books and like to be able to do that. And I'm sorry, I used to work for the Queen's Library, and the library all over the place, not just here in New York, provides essential services. And if this fucking jabroni actually did what he was gonna do, it would have been catastrophic. Any hooser, he's walking it back because everybody hates it. So, you know, he'll find some other way to shovel money to the cops so they can fumble it all on harassment, boats, condos, lavish trips, just off the overtime. Any hooser, this week on the pod, I actually have a guest. Get hype. I got to sit down with my absolute fave, fashion icon in the making, a luxury, or Raymond, as some folks know him. Anyhow, we chopped it up about how he got from HR to fashion finally, as being, you know, he's a complete and utter fashion plate. You should see him. He's just amazing. Any hooser, we talked about it. I stand down a little, and it was a great conversation. We had a good time trading some HR nightmare stories. And I hope you guys enjoy. And it's coming up in 2 seconds. Today on the podcast, I have a fashion icon in the making, a globe-trotting example of fabulousness, the founder and CEO of House of Flash and the Luxury Experience, an intentional brand. This is the House of Flash, that is, an intentional brand that specializes in providing impactful, luxurious experiences for all, an immediate fave, and my frat brother, Raymond. You know what? I just realized that I do not have your last name on here. What is your last name?
Well, that is fine because I haven't been using my government officially. I've now like officially been going by Luxury.
Okay. All right. All right. I'm going to leave all
but
this in.
In the future, my last name is Luxury. I mean, my last name is Walker.
Well, it is just Luxury.
So you know, the future.
I have been informed, everyone, so everybody knows. Welcome, Luxury, to
thank you,
Mostly
thank
Maxed
you.
And Other Things. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it because I know you booked and busy.
I am never too busy for you.
Aw, thank you. So let's get into the first question, which is, what do you do and why do you do it?
Absolutely. Well, currently, as you shared, I am the CEO and founder of House of Flash, which is my clothing line, my luxury clothing line. So that specializes in providing an exuberance of luxury for all, while trying to focus on economical ways that we can do that for individuals. So I've always been a luxury fashion lover. I love luxury brands. I believe that you sometimes can't put a price tag on happiness. And so while I enjoy, you know, a lot of the larger luxurious brands, I also would find that I enjoyed the experience even more. So I love the idea of going into a store and being assisted by a sales associate or sales assistant, whichever term they want to use at whichever brand it is. I love, you know, having a glass of champs or juice or water and a snack while looking through, you know, what items and what latest trends and collections are out. I love, you know, custom packaging. I love, you know, people learning your name and getting to know you as you become a regular customer, or if you're not even in the same, you know, country, but you're, you know, you're in the system. I love that experience. So mm-hmm. I wanted to create a brand that would provide that level of service, but also provide that level of detail within clothing at, you know, a little more of an economic price for friends, family, and all those who are interested.
Making it accessible for people, basically.
Yes.
Get that luxury experience. I love that.
Yes, yes,
yes. There's something to be said for that. I can't lie. Last year, I was on my YSL shit, and I went into the store. I went direct to Saint Laurent at, what location? They were inside of Saks.
Okay.
The husband gave me a YSL bag for our anniversary. And I went in, and of course, you know the energy. I came in, I had my Gucci bag because I knew what it was. And I walked in and I was like, I had like my Gucci bag. I was wearing like black designers down except for my Gucci bag and my Jorns because I am anti-shoes. Mm-hmm. And I went in and they, you know, you know the energy. You walk in, they don't think you coming in there to buy. They think you might be coming in to boost or some shit. And the two older managers were kind of like, And I was like, deal with it, bitch. I've come here to buy. At your own peril, play with me. So right. This younger woman came in and she was so sweet and so nice, and she put me in the system and she was really kind, and she was like, what about this one, what about this one, because I had my eye on a certain bag and I didn't when I saw it live, I didn't like it, so I bought a completely different purse. But she was so nice, and it was such a nice feeling, you know. It was like, I get to be a dilettante for the day, darling.
Yes.
Give me my beverage, and where's my car? I'm not getting on the train with you, plebes.
Yes, 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 not with my new bag. Absolutely.
No, sir. I can't get that into the train dust, please.
Yes, and no turnstile locking for us. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not for nothing. I haven't been on a train since 2020, but that's a whole nother thing.
Listen, I just recently got back on the train, I think this year, due to gridlock traffic. So I get it. I was the Uber king before Uber actually became what it is now.
Same. I was the early stage adopter. When they had nothing but giant SUVs for the trips.
Yes,
and every trip was like $35, it felt like. It was wonderful.
Yes.
What a time.
But yes, providing that, you know, level of experience that you think that you can only see on television, you know, making sure that, you know, we as people of color, we start to produce, you know, at the same level as some of these larger brands that have a good amount of us on the creative side and on the production side, and definitely within the retail side. So
and we create the trends anyway. Why shouldn't we
exactly
benefit from it?
So that is the goal for House of Flash, my baby. That is where we're planning to go. And I'm excited to see where, you know, it continues to take me.
Awesome. So how did you get started in your industry?
So a lot of folks have always said that, you know, I always get the question, are you in fashion? So prior to even transitioning into this officially, I worked within human resources for over 10 years.
Bang.
I felt like I had to have that corporate, in order to be successful, you know, I fell into that whole narrative that I had to have a corporate job. I had to climb up the corporate ladder. Also, as, you know, a gay male that's not ashamed to say that I am gay, I also didn't want to fall into the cliche of every gay man has to either do here, work in fashion, or some of those very old school things that you saw on television in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, that was a very big thing because I just did not want to be a cliche. I wanted to not be judged by how I was dressed or how I looked, but I wanted people to know, you know, I, you know, went to the best Black college there is in the world, Howard University.
I was waiting for that to come up.
Always does. I went to business school.
That's right.
You know, I, you know, am a member of Phi Beta Sigma. Like, I'm all of these things that, you know, are part of the elite. I am not just, you know, what you see on TV, the gay friend who works in fashion, and that's
sassy
story,
for no
right?
reason.
For no reason. And so I chased this whole dream of, you know, growing within corporate, and I did. I quickly was able to go from, you know, like a coordinator to VP overnight. Nice. While it was great and the money was awesome and it afforded me the opportunities to travel and feed this lifestyle of luxury, it still just wasn't my calling. So in September of last year, all of these stars just finally not only aligned, but they got physical. And I'm not even going to say the stars, because I do truly believe in God. And I know that he, you know, guides my footsteps. He literally was like, okay, I told you 1,000 times that this isn't what you're supposed to be doing. And since you're not going to listen, I'm going to push you out. So he created a situation where, like, I had no choice but to step into this. And I don't regret it. It has been, like, I don't even have the words, because people, so many people think that this has been happening for years. And I'm like, wow.
It absolutely looked like it. I was like, oh, look, we out here.
I've been on the scene. You know, I've been a customer. I've been a client. I've been a very well-known client. I've, you know, shopped all over the world. I've attended things all over the world within fashion, but never officially walking in this as a profession. And so literally, it was just like, kind of like, folks were waiting for me to finally be serious. And that's how we got here.
I love that for you. I love that for all of us, because we all benefit when we see some fly shit. So good
yes,
for you.
Yes.
For you. So what do you hope to achieve? What does the final form for your career look like?
To tell you the truth, I don't personally have a final form. I am literally riding the ride and enjoying it. I think I'm very much in a space right now where, while I'm super busy and I'm figuring that out, because I thought that I was busy before and I clearly didn't know what busy was. I am now in a space where, you know, I'm not trying to become a billionaire. I'm not trying to, you know, necessarily become famous. I am just really enjoying what I do. Which is how I ended up finding my other part of my enterprise, which is the luxury experience. So I always tell folks, especially clients, like, I think it's corny as a designer to only like push my brand and act like that's the end all be all, because I am not always in House of Flash. I'm not always going to wear my brand, because at the end of the day, at the core, I'm a shopper. I'm a fashion person. I love variety. I love, you know, there's a different vibe that you get when you go to Louis Vuitton than Gucci. There's a different vibe when you go to Givenchy and then go to Balmain. It's a different vibe when you go to, you know, YSL and then go to Dior. So, and I love them all. Like, I love all of the different experiences, you know, and all of the different stories that come from these different brands. And I never want to limit myself from having those experiences or providing those for others. So I founded the Luxury Experience, which is pretty much my fashion enterprise. So within that, you have my styling, my luxury curation, which could go anywhere from shopping experiences to events, to travel, pretty much anything you can think about that is luxurious, you can find me at the tip of it. So if that's true simply, story. Hey, I want to set up time to hit the flagship store on the Champs-Élysées in France. How can I, in Paris, how can I do that? To, I need a private jet.
Come on, come in the room. Come on now.
All of that is within that.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I might have to holler at you. I'm turning 50 soon, and I might want to have a luxury experience.
Ooh, let's do it.
Get styled up, do the pictures, do the whole kit and caboodle.
Yes, and it's a one-stop shop. You can literally get your clothes, get your styling, get your vehicle, get your dinner, get your everything.
I love
all
it.
In one place. And I think
I've seen some of your dinners and they look amazing. We are here savoring
you.
Bottles. Yes, bitch. I love it.
Yes. And so I think much. That's what we need, right? Especially as people of color and specifically as Black people. Like, I think that I still even see this now while I'm living certain things. Like, we are taught that certain things aren't attainable. True. And we're afraid to not just aspire, but actually, you know, give things a try, because people make us think that, oh, you can't afford it, you can't this, you can't that. Right. And it's like, the more that I learned, the more that I realized that, you know, I can do a lot with almost anyone's budget. I mean, you can't be cheap. You can be frugal, but you can't be cheap. but you also, again, don't have to be a millionaire or even a thousandaire potentially to do some of the things that you see folks doing in mainstream.
Yeah, because most of those cats are fugaz anyway. They're not really balling like they showing you they balling. Right. They're not.
And they're getting a lot of this for free. Mm-hmm. But because they're given publicity. So.
Correct. Exposure.
Yeah. that's the new compensation these days.
Yes. And for me, I'm like, I'm down for all of it because I'm, you know, you get to a certain point and it's kind of like, you know, something, I want some decadence. I want some like straight mm-hmm. up, like straight luxurious everything, like no cutting corners, no whatever. I just want the thing and I want it to be amazing and I don't want any surprises. You know what I mean? Yes. It's just, you know exactly what you're going to get and that's what you should get immediately. You know what I'm
Absolutely.
Saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially for Black folks because, you know, we create these trends. We're the reason for a lot of things.
Yes,
you know
we are.
Look at Gucci. They had to give Dapper Dan his things because he made them pop.
Exactly.
And they were like, you know what? Let's collab. And it was the smartest thing they did.
Yes.
Because you can't get streetwear just from looking at us. You have to go to the source. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You gotta get to the people who know this shit and are not out here perpetrating a fraud, you know? So, you know, we create it all. We got them out here with their baby hairs laid down and they got their bamboos and their door knockers on.
Okay, French braids.
Okay.
Lip.
Give me a break. The
oversized
lip.
Clothing.
You see it. The nails, the stuff that they said was ghetto.
Yes.
All the stuff they said was ghetto.
It's all in. And you know, and they're doing it honestly more than us.
Yeah, it's funny to me, actually. It's looking real funny to your girl.
Yeah, me too. Like, I'm looking, I'm like, okay.
All right, girl.
Wow. I wouldn't have done that.
Like, close, but no cigar.
Right.
You tried to bless up. Okay, so my fourth question is, what advice would you give to someone who is interested in your work?
So I would definitely say that everyone has to take their own journey and their own path. So the first thing is we're all going to potentially go through imposter syndrome or some kind of syndrome where you're questioning yourself. Go through it, because I'm not going to sit here and act like it's something that you can just get over and that's it. Like, go through it and let your time frame be your time frame, but don't get stuck in it. I have no regrets because I feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be when I'm supposed to be. But oftentimes I'd be lying if I don't say, like, there's certain meetings I'll be in or certain rooms I'll be in. And I'll be like, wow, what if I started this 5 years ago?
Yeah, that's how
and
I was.
I have to take a step back and say, like, don't do that to yourself. Like, mm-hmm. you are where you're supposed to be at this time. Because truthfully, 5 years ago, you might not have been prepared for this, or you know, it might not have been the same type of room. So don't question it. Right. So I'd say that's one of the first things. Go through your moment, but eventually get over it. Give yourself a time frame, get over it, and then start pushing. Mm-hmm. Also, create your own lane, and not, you know, so much just creating your own lane within the industry, but create your own path and lane for how you're going to get to your goal. Just because Luxury did it this way doesn't mean that that's the way that you're supposed to do it, and so on and so forth. First, not letting yourself, you know, be your worst enemy. Create your own lane. Just because someone else's path, you know, took them one way and they did it this way doesn't mean that that's the way that you need to do it. Because there's different lessons and different encounters that we all have to go through in order to get where we're supposed to be. And you can't do that if your GPS is going in the wrong direction.
I know that's right. That's a word right there. Okay.
So I'd say that. And then finally, just, you know, educate yourself as much as you can. I don't mean like necessarily formal education. I, for one, never went to school for fashion. I never formally sat down to learn anything that I know. Mm-hmm. I truly learned most of my stuff through friends that worked within the industry, friends that worked in retail, having a partner who has a senior role within retail, also getting, you know, finding work for a little while in the industry, you know, hitting the floor and being an associate at a retail store for a little while so I can learn merchandising and things that I already knew that at the end of the day, I realized like this is a lot of this is based on perspective and creativity. But to be able to, again, sit in a room and know terminology and understand how to express yourself when you're dealing with corporations or
speaking
brands.
The language,
speaking the lingo, which is super important. So educate yourself so that you can, you know, be taken seriously and so that you feel in the loop when you're there. You don't want to be sitting in a room and you feel like people are talking circles around you or reviewing something and, you know, it's a great opportunity, but you don't really understand what's being asked of you.
I hear that. And that's a major key because a lot of people jump out the window with no knowledge or any kind of any, not even a light skimming of education. And I, what I find of late is people are not comfortable just saying, well, I don't know. You know what I mean? They'll just say a thing, right? And then make it like trying to make it gospel. I'm like, but you literally were not outside while this was going on. So you're really out here just talking. Like Google exists. You know what I mean? Talk to somebody who was outside. Get some intel from somebody who knows. It's not hard. But
and
everybody
you don't
wants
have to have a PhD in what you're talking about. Like you just literally scratch the surface enough to carry a conversation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or get clarity.
Right.
Funny
or
enough,
ask the question.
Or ask, so funny enough, you say that because I was a victim of this myself. I did it to myself. I am a huge fan of Karl Lagerfeld. Followed his career, you know, at Chanel. One of my inspirations around finally like doing my own thing was, you know, him creating his own brand. And then as I further researched him, you know, I learned that he also, you know, did creative work for Balmain, which is a huge brand that I love. And I absolutely adore Olivia Rousteing. So that was a big thing for me. And I'm thinking like, I know my stuff. And I'm going to take it to Greekdom. I know my shit because you know how we are, right?
Of course.
So I'm coming in like bona fide, like on a Greek level with knowing my info. Like, and so you know what that means, right? I get to Paris for Fashion Week last season and I am at the event for Cara Loves Carl collaboration. I am getting interviewed by the media. And they are asking me questions and I'm nailing it. I'm like, I got this. They get to a portion about Karl Lagerfeld and his finances. And I am now at a loss, but instead of shutting up, I continue to talk as if I know. And come to find out, which I didn't learn until that moment, Karl Lagerfeld actually, after everything was said and done, which this happens with a lot of major luxury brands, he had no rights, ownership, or funds from his actual brand. And
didn't that happen to Halston too?
Well, listen, that happened. I mean, it happened to so many different. I mean, have you seen the movie House of Gucci?
I sure did. That was crazy. It was not a good movie, but it was good information.
Good information, okay? So I had no idea that this was the case. And I quote myself continuing to talk. And then I made a fool out of myself. And it was a little embarrassing, but I was also grateful that the producers had grace. And rather than air me making a fool of myself, they were like, well, we'll edit that out. But then, you know, I then posed the question, well, tell me more.
Right.
You know, especially as a person that's growing a brand and hoping to, you know, one day be a Karl Lagerfeld. What happened? And so they filled me in. And, you know, I think about that often and I let that inspire me in other conversations. To be bold enough to ask or say, you know what, honestly, I don't know. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if they're asking, they obviously know. Right.
So exactly.
You might as well tell me because. Baby, I don't know.
And they could have literally filled me in and we could have filled the world in.
Correct. We'd have all got educated together.
So yes,
that's
so
me
no
in my HR sudden. Capacity. Cass will ask me some shit, and I'll be like, "Oh, I don't know. Let me do some research on that, and I'll get back
right.
to."
Right, and
it's very easy to say instead of talking out your ass and giving wrong intel.
Yes,
especially in that position, you don't want to get nobody no wrong intel, honey.
Okay, so you folks, can... it happens in fashion. Mm-hmm. Don't let it happen to you. Don't do what I did. Just straight up and down say, "I don't know. Can you let me know? Do you know? You know?" And play it up. Do you know?
Right. Turn that right back on them.
Turn it right back around.
Babes, don't nobody want to be caught out here with their pants down.
Right.
Alrighty. So my fifth question. What was the worst job you've ever had?
Oh, well, you know, from the HR standpoint, I'm going to try to honor all of my legal everything's out there and keep it as
well. You know, the NLRB said, you know, if you signed a NDA, you could talk about it because it's retroactively they cut that off because people, you know, people abuse those so they can mm-hmm. get people shut up. But just to be on the safe side.
Well, yeah, well, you know, I'm not gonna name the name. I'm also gonna try though to make it not as specific as possible. It's a tie, honestly. It's a tie. There were two organizations that I worked for. And one was centered and cultured around people being there too long and wanting new blood, fresh face, new ideas. We want to see them grow.
Right.
And they took the new blood that was there trying to do everything that they hired them to do, AKA me, and fought every single proposal, strategy, policy, anything you could think of, fought against every single piece. And that was really rough because, again, it was a small organization. And I think the youngest person in tenure there was there for like 8 years.
Oh, wow.
And so for the most part, there were people that were there from its like inception, 20 years. And so here I am literally within like my first 90 days doing a full, you know, evaluation and, you know, listening towards and everything and then coming with a diagnosis of recommendations for how we can do the things that you said you hired me for. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they were just excuses after one of after course. Another. It was just like, okay, so why am I here? Cool. Right. And then the other organization, it was pretty much the same thing, but instead it was newer leadership. So I came under a new leader who truthfully just wanted, I guess, my job or wanted to be as effective in their job as I was in mine. And that was one of the biggest reasons I had to leave the corporate world as well, because this is not to sound cocky or anything at all, but I've realized and I've stopped trying to dim my light for others. And I've realized that I'll shine no matter what I'm doing or where I am, because that's just a gift that I've been given. But unfortunately, we know perception, right? If people are not as confident within themselves, if they don't know themselves, if they haven't figured out themselves, that type of energy is always going to be perceived not only the wrong way, but it's going to be perceived and interpreted in a way that's going to be intimidating for them.
Yeah, they're going to make their insecurities a you problem instead of a them problem.
The
Absolutely.
Amount of projecting from both of my managers at both of those organizations was crazy. You know, I was challenged on everything, and I was just like, well, who actually has been doing this work in particular for 10 years,
Let me see your credentials, homie.
Right? Like
if you're great at this, what am I doing here then?
What am I doing? You know, or
and I see that
me.
A lot as a contractor, because, you know, I'm a consultant. So, you know, that's always the best part of it is like you're in it, but you're not of it. But at the same time, some cats don't get that, they get that twisted. You know, they try to treat us like we're, you know, employees. And I'm like, oh, no, beloved, I am not. I call my own shots and I pick my own time and I give you exactly what you contract for. So like, you know, if you don't know something, just say that. Again, it takes you back to the whole not wanting to admit that you don't know something. Like who did you come looking for because of something you don't know how to do? You know what I'm saying? And the thing about those places where everybody's a lifer, they do the same thing from the same place and it's the most dangerous thing. And it's always on some, well, this is how we've always done it. Well, this is how we did it in the past. I'm like, but babe, you wanted to get into the future. So that's why you called me.
And that would literally be my response all the time. Well, you said this is how we've always, or this is how we used to, but I thought that we were trying to implement change. And I'm not here trying to like build Rome all over.
Right.
Especially not
bolster the foundation
hours.
Of what you have, but beloved. Yes,
let's start somewhere, you know? And so I have one of my managers, literally, I will never forget. We were talking about performance improvement plans. And at my heart, I'll always be a people person, which is why I even went into HR.
That tracks.
Care about people. I mean, people can also get on my nerves. I mean, I lie. But I say I care about people. I mean about our well-being. I want the best for everybody, you know, no matter race, color, creed, gender, I want the best. And so I found that HR was like my little way of trying to get that for people. And so when there were things that just weren't equitable or right, I'm like, it's my job to safeguard this and let you know, like, nah, bro, we shouldn't be doing this. We can't do this, and this has risk.
Yeah, we're the killjoys. We come in, we tell you, you can't tell that joke. People might find that offensive. We the party stoppers. You know what I'm saying? Right. The guests don't like it. People either commit to wanting to actually have a changed culture in their orgs, or they don't.
Exactly.
And most of them don't. They talk about it, but they're not about it.
Exactly. And I'm like, and we're mitigating a lot of risk. Like, yes. And my job is to call out the risks that you think are super small that have detrimental impacts.
Right.
And so speaking of which, this manager, it was someone that was supposed to like go on a PIP. No, we were just talking about the PIP process in general, because I was like, there is no formal PIP process. So let's, and those who may not know what a PIP is, it's a performance improvement plan. So 9 times out of 10, companies utilize these to, you know, try to get an employee who's having performance issues to improve. Unfortunately, a lot of organizations try to use this as a route to manage people out or to fire them.
It's punitive. They always use it as a punitive thing.
It should never be used that way, because you're wasting company money. Like, if we know this person is going to fail, just fire them.
Don't bother. Just go ahead and move it, like you're move wasting, them to a final, or get them out of here.
Exactly. Because we're going to have to monitor this and check in and look. And
more often than not, unfortunately, they don't create the circumstances for the person to be successful with it either. Like, they're not getting checked in on. They're not having discussions. They're not getting training. They're not getting, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it's a two-way street in order to get these things to work.
Exactly.
But more often than not, like you said, they use it as a punitive measure. It's the last stop before we kick your ass out of here. And it's kind of like, babes, we could have just deaded all of this.
Just deaded right here, right. And so I've always been that person. I'm like, well, I'm not doing that. So if we're not going to really have this person, like if the goal isn't for them to improve and potentially successfully come out of this, then let's start the document trail, but we won't be using this process.
Right.
And so my manager said to me, when a manager tells me that they want to put someone on a PIP, I don't challenge them.
Right.
And I was like, red alert, red alert, red alert. So I first had to, this was a white male. I first had to call him out and let him know that that's a bias. I don't know if it's conscious or unconscious, but
probably
you are now saying that
to be unconscious.
The manager's word and observation is accurate without any knowledge of what the employee experiences. You know, for all we know, this manager don't know how to manage.
Right. And that's another thing that organizations are terrible at. They put any old body in a managerial spot because they think it's time. And I'm like, not some of these people can't be chiefs. They got to be followers.
At all. And some of them don't want to. I mean.
Right. And it shows when they get the gig.
Exactly. You know, and going from individual contributor to manager, like, is not an overnight thing. You know, I personally believe that every organization should have some kind of cohort or program. Absolutely. Where everyone receives equal training, whether if they know at some point they want to be a manager.
And it comes from the top. The top needs management training, too, because some of them can't say it either.
So, child, when this man told me that, I was just like, okay, well, that's not how I operate. In fact, I am going to interview the hell out of the manager to make sure that what they're saying makes sense, to make sure that we're at this point of escalation, because I need to cover us. Because if we're putting so-and-so on the PIP for doing this, but him over there didn't get on the PIP for doing the same thing, mm-hmm. guess what? We potentially have a discriminatory case on our hands.
Sure do.
Wrong answer. I became a target.
Wow. I love that, though. When you try to point people in the right direction, because there's only so much you can do, right, in that position. Like, you can get the horse to the water. If they don't drink, then, you know what I'm saying, you did what you could do. Yeah. I want to stay thirsty. That's on y'all. And, like, my favorite is, like, the fake positive cats who immediately toxic up the place when you have to like redirect them on something that they are intent on doing that is absolutely something that's going to cause a problem. Those folks are the worst people to try to counsel, because they don't really want your counsel. They feel like put upon that you're even talking to them about this thing. You know what I'm saying? They want to be able to do whatever they want. But I'm like, you can absolutely go down this road. However, prepare for the fallout.
Yes.
You're not free of any consequences of this action that you want to take. I want you to know that. And I want it to be on the record that I told you.
Oh, I'm not going to do on the record person, child. I will quickly
back up.
Okay, I'm going to follow up with an email. Okay. Yes, sir. Just letting you know that this was my advice. Can you formally just let me know?
Last conversation.
Mm-hmm, right.
You're not about to catch me in nothing, honey.
At all. Yes. Mm-hmm. Per our last conversation on April 15th at 1:46.
Because what you're not going to do is make me the whipping girl for your fuckers.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of these orgs think that HR is, to take the L's for you. No, ma'am. No,
yes.
Sir.
Yes.
Absolutely the hell not. That's not what we do here. And I think a lot of people watch The Office and think they could treat HR how you could treat them. And that's not true either.
Not at all. Yeah.
I am not Toby Flenderson.
I tell people that all the time. I would be like, listen, this is not The Office.
You're not going to come to me crazy.
Spectrums. You know, like, I'm here. First of all, I'm an employee just like the rest of us. I just happen to be the employee that has to take care of the employees. Mm-hmm. So what you're not going to do, because we all in the same struggle, I'm just actually the advocate trying to fix the struggle. Mm-hmm. So what you're not going to do is sit here and act like I'm the savior, because unfortunately, I am not.
And that's another thing too. A lot of these orgs think that there's a magic bullet for whatever thing that's going on that they're not handling appropriately. Where we tell you, you need to put money on it. You need to staff up appropriately for it. You need to do XYZ. You need to put some coins on this in order for it to be an effective program that you want. But they're like, I don't want to do that. I'm like, well, then you don't want any changes.
You want to shortchange it. You know,
you want to be cheap.
I'll never forget the same organization. I was going to bring on our lovely, lovely Soror Gigi and her DE&I services. And, you know, folks who know Gigi knows that she's been recognized across the world. Before she even started doing her own thing, she was like the queen of mind gym, just killing the L&D game and took that experience and just completely turned around the space of D&I, and she was giving us a significantly discounted rate on the strength of our relationship to really try to come in and do the work.
Right.
And the same person said, well, that looks good, but I'm thinking about this, and pointed me to a website that pretty much just posted things on the internet.
Nice. Some out-of-the-box bullshit.
Okay. I said, okay, well, this is where you have your little affinity program that you wanted to create. You can deliver these two to them, and then mm-hmm. you can let them know why you're going with this versus that, because I'm not doing it.
I know that's
well,
right.
Well, why? Because I know that I smell this bullshit. They're going to smell the bullshit, and I don't want them to think that I'm the bull.
Correct. Like, I was the one who dropped the deuce in here, not me.
Right. No, sir, not at all. So, again, wrong answer.
Oh, my God. So, it's like, oh, time to go.
Yes. So, those are my two, worst experiences. But I think at the end of it, all of the bad experiences, and I've had some interesting experiences because, again, I, being gifted and likable mm-hmm. are not easy things for insecure people in power
That's facts.
To deal with. You know, when you can just be, you know, an entry-level person and have some type of impact or influence mm-hmm. on others without doing anything yourself, like mm-hmm. on purpose, but mm-hmm. just existing, mm-hmm. and you don't have leaders that can, one, understand that and actually jump on it, okay? Right. Because that's actually working
that's
very well.
That's the best kind of leader, boy. Like, we have a client like that now. Like, the CEO is down for whatever we're down for. And I love it. They pay us right on time.
Yeah.
Mama's like, what y'all need to do this better? And I'm like,
and
that's the kind
that
of game
how,
I like to play.
And when you don't have that, you easily again become a target.
Absolutely.
And
you become the problem.
You are the problem. You mm-hmm. know, like you.
Because we had a straight up Michael Scott in our situation for an engagement that we had. Fake positivity, heady, couldn't tell her that though. You know, one of those people who worked in the place for a very long time, wanted to do like trauma bonding circles and call it icebreakers. And like, it was a whole lot of, you know, it was like a George Costanza situation, a lot of movement, mm-hmm. not a lot being produced. That was her. She was a hybrid of Michael Scott and George Costanza.
I would have lost my mind.
My husband was the one on site for that one. And I was glad because I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses, and I would have told her to get out my face. Because it would have been, I'd have blown it up. I would have blown up the engagement because she'd have said one stupid thing too many to me. And I'd have been like, babes, this is not it. You are not it. You are the problem. You are the problem.
And then it's something to say about those people that are problems. And for whatever reason, the organization doesn't want to address them.
Especially
the
those
problem.
Lifers. She's been in the spot for 20 years. Everybody there been there for 20 years. The it's stagnant. The leadership is not the best. They're churning people in and out of the department. There's a whole lot of like stuff like that. They weren't responsive to things, and we came in there and people were getting responses. The managers were appreciative. They were vocal about that appreciation. They were going up for what we were doing, and baby was sick over it. Okay,
I am sure. And it's like, sick. Why would we sit here? Like, do you realize you're going to lose so much for this one person? Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, I was contracting for an organization and I stayed there contracting for at least 2 years, but we had, I'm not being ageist at all. I have to say it like this because the truth is the truth. We had a little girl who was a leader. Like, I want to say I was still in like my, going into potentially my mid-20s. And so she was like, at most probably just turning 21. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was like a lead. I can't even say that she was a manager, but she was one of those people that just got too much power too quick, mm-hmm. but she was nasty and horrible to everyone. So many mm-hmm. people left because of her. Mm-hmm. Other departments didn't want to work with her or right. us because of her. You know, I came on and again, people would start coming to me and I'm like, y'all, I'm not your manager. Right. And I became the enemy. Mm-hmm. Before I got there, there were a lot of reports about her and nothing was done. The woman who hired me, who I had a great relationship with, and I was even vulnerable in talking to her about like my interactions with this woman who, no shade at all, just keeping it real, had no professionalism, was very ghetto and very street. And I mean, I'm from the project, so I get it. But Colt, and I'm might from say the hood you got a too,
code switching, I mean,
you ain't
is
got
a thing,
I'm not even saying you got a code switch.
You don't have to, but like,
when you have someone that literally says he gonna get his, like in public,
where people can hear it.
Get his.
No, ma'am.
I think that there's a problem here, and I will never
you to take
forget.
That to the take your burdens to the group chat, beloved. Child. Don't tell that to nobody where they could hear it. Okay.
Child. So I thought just for sure, like, okay, this was the nail on the casket, and this woman terminated both of us because she said that I was a part of the drama, and I will never forget how I felt after that because I was just like, wait. It took you 4 years to get rid of this person that everyone complained about.
Right.
And rather than you addressing it from the beginning, because I remember when I was talking to her about the way that she was treating me and what I witnessed, her words were, I'm not ready to give up on her. Less. And this was a middle-aged white woman.
There you go. Say less.
That translated to me. I was like, okay, she's your community service project.
Boosh.
At the cost of every single person that has to work with her. She's your community service project.
Correct.
Even though she is literally creating a toxic environment that is tangibly evident, your project is more important.
You were working off your white guilt with this woman.
Instead
of doing the right thing, which is to get her the fuck out of here, you decided, let's
give her another chance. She has so much potential. She has no potential at all, but okay.
All right. This is who you've decided to cast your lot with.
This is your queen. Okay.
Is this your queen?
She fired both of us. And the way that she kept face was she tried to make it seem like it was a mutual issue.
Like you both were not a cultural fit.
Not a cultural thing that this girl had provided. And so everyone literally saw through the bullshit. But that's when I learned. I learned, that one, we don't get to play the game the same way as others.
Sure don't.
And that in corporate. Just because there's a problem, I never forget my special made a great analogy for me that makes more sense the older I get. He's like, you can't always call out the person that's naked thinking that everyone doesn't know that they're naked. You are sitting here going, y'all can't tell this motherfucker is naked. Meanwhile, do you really think that you're the only one in the room that knows that this person is naked?
Everybody can see their bush.
He's like, you just gotta learn how to just not let it impact you in the way that you can do it sometimes, the way that they're coping with it. Because you wanting to do the right thing and call it out isn't always going to turn out to be the right thing for you. And that's the unfortunate thing about this world.
That's facts. I mean, look at Trump. That boy naked as hell. Some people going up for this dude like he's smart, like he got, like he could write, like he got verbiage.
Right.
Like he's an idiot. He's a stupid, depends diaper filling idiot. However, power, people want to be where that is.
Exactly.
That's where people want to be. Even people who know better, like people have ruined their whole careers off this dude, and it's like he don't even rate.
Right.
He eats Kentucky Fried Chicken every day. He has no skills. He fed people a stack of McDonald's when they came to visit the White House. Old fries and Big Macs.
And,
is this
and
your
that's,
king?
That's your king. I was literally about to say, and that's your king. Yeah. Yes. Learned
we're all
very,
the worst for it.
Learned very harshly that the game is rigged.
Absolutely.
And the only way to, I can't even say counter that because I don't know if we'll ever get to a place where we can truly counter it. But one thing I can tell you is I now know how to come and play it.
I know that's right. Yeah, I figured that out pretty early on because, you know, I started out in corporate. Like, I started out as an admin in corporate. So, like, when you come in as an admin, you know where all the bodies are hid.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like being It's kind of like being a domestic where you just kind of like everybody talking in front of you and shit. Like you don't, like you invisible and shit.
You ain't got no ears, no
You ain't got no ears. You're just a body to move papers around. You know what I mean? So you get an idea of what people really think and what their real ideas about things and people are. You know what I mean? And it's like, I learned that like in undergrad working at a law firm. And it was like, oh, these people are garbage and they're all stupid. Nobody is special. Like then I went into finance and I was like, oh my God, everybody here is stupid. Like nobody in this room with me is special. They're connected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They have whiteness working for them. They're somebody, somebody. I am the smartest person in here. But I'm also the blackest and the brokest.
Exactly. And once you understand that, you then, I think, know how to just be in the space and assert a certain way.
Absolutely. I was the unfriendly black hottie. I didn't smile enough. I didn't make people comfortable. They didn't feel like they can come to me good.
Exactly.
They didn't feel like they could come to me with nonsense because I always drew my boundaries. That's one thing. I did do.
I'm not playing with you. I can be nice. I can smile sweetly.
I will give you all of the kindness. But baby, if you try it, you're gonna get this Claire Huxtable. I will cuss you clean out without one cuss word.
Exactly.
And you will understand exactly what I'm talking about. But I will do it with a smile and it'll be kind. And I'll be like, well, I don't think this is something that's in my purview. I don't have the bandwidth.
Which is exactly what's done to us all the time with the passive-aggressive behavior. So I love, yes, you got to give it back. I mean, I've been so, you know, like, you know, you make the rest of us look bad by, you know, getting dressed on Zoom. Well, stop wearing t-shirts. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You're never going to see me wash my hair and get on a call. Like, I don't know why you think that that's even okay, even if you were talking to your friends, but this is me. And yes, you're going to get this Versace blazer.
You're going to get, yes, honey. I wish y'all could see this look that we are giving today, honey. It's phenomenal. We're getting mixed media. We're getting print. We're getting color, honey.
Yes.
Listen, everything I am a slob. I am
in little box going. That's what you're getting. Yes.
That's what's up. I know that's what's up. And the thing of it is, it's like, I feel like because of the pandemic, we've really all gotten real sloppy, myself included. I am anti-shoes. You will see me at a function. Yes, I will be wearing a gown, but I will probably have Jorns on underneath.
Not even mad.
And not give a shit because A, old. B, I don't care. I don't care, guys.
And my whole thing was, this is what my parents, my grandparents always instilled in me. Mm-hmm. And even in school, like, you know, how you prepare yourself is how you're going to show up and perform. So I know me, bruh, if I came to work in my living room in my pajamas, you are hardly getting anything because I'm in pajama mode.
Right.
If I came in t-shirts and sweats, you might get a little bit, okay? But if you want me to perform and work, I gotta actually get myself in a work mentality.
That was one of the things that I leaned on. You know, because I always worked from home because, you know, I could work off site before COVID and everything. But what I realized when I first started working from home was, you can't work in bed because that's not real. You're not serious.
Right.
Bed is for sleeping. Two, you need to have some sort of uniform. So I started to lean into buying like loungewear and like winter loungewear and summer loungewear. And like stuff that doesn't make me look like a whole booger wolf when I'm in this little square talking to people. You know what I mean? Yes, my hair is raggedy. However, I'm going to give you a wrap.
And that's
If it's terrible, I'm covering it up. We're going to give you a lip. We're going to give you an earring.
Exactly.
I forgot to put my rings on. We're going to do jewelry. We're going to make
I'm
going to
throw on a t-shirt and a blazer. I don't need to put on a full suit, a t-shirt and a blazer, you know?
Because you're about business. You're dressing for what you're doing.
I did a training during a pandemic. I was like heavy independent consultant on like helping people transition within the pandemic when folks who didn't work from home immediately just had to work from home. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things I was reminding people was, one, yes, do not work in your pajamas. You're not going to be productive.
You won't.
Also, I don't care how big your home space is, set up a space for work.
Correct.
And step away from it. I don't care if you work from your dining room table. Real. Sit on one end for work.
That's literally what I was doing during when I was working in a nonprofit, and we transitioned to going back to the house, and I was fine with everybody was struggling. I was fine. It was wonderful for me. I love it. I love working from home. I have no problem with it. I don't need to be around people. I don't need a water cooler. I don't need to know how your weekend went. I don't care.
Exactly. No, that is me. That is me. Like,
I would do my little, we would do our career fairs all virtually, and I'd be business, baby. Earrings, necklace, suit top, party bottoms, but we was business from here on up. You know what I'm saying?
That's all you need to
and
see.
It changed the energy. It changed the energy. People were coming to these damn things, and like, even now, I remember I was working for a think tank last year, and I did a lot of interviews for a lot of like research positions and stuff like that. And baby, some of these little kids would get on this here computer in a t-shirt, hair not combed. I'm not sure they washed their face. No. I was like, babe, you can't be serious. Mind you, these are all like super academic, like superstars. Like there were really no dubs in this cohort of people that I was talking to. But babes.
Somebody didn't tell them that you have to bring that same energy, or at least
I mean, a stretched out t-shirt one time, it was dingy. I was like, babe, did you know we were gonna meet?
Well, I can't even be mad, because again, I had coworkers coming to the meeting with their wet hair and a towel drying. No,
that's not me, babe.
And I'm just like,
if anything, if I'm conditioning what's going on up here, I'll put a plastic cap and put a head wrap on top of that.
Right. Or you're not gonna see me.
Or you don't have to keep your camera on, babe.
Today is the day I'm not gonna be on video. Okay? Like, what?
And not for nothing. Keeping the camera on after a while for that many fucking Zooms felt like violence after a while. Like, you know how it would just suck your energy being in looking into that nothingness, because you don't know where to focus and stuff. Yes. So you're just kind of like, you would be dead fucking tired at the end of these meetings, right? So I gave grace to people who just could not. And I was sometimes a person who could not.
Like, it's not mandatory.
It isn't. There are outfits that are toxic as fuck about that type of shit. They'll turn on your camera.
Yeah, no. I really wish that some folks like just decided to turn it off. I mean, I had wet hair. Mm-mm. No shade to anybody that's a parent, but I had to look at the children, and the children are coming in the room, and now the children are sitting on your lap, and just like all of these things. And
I saw a lot of cat butts, of cat butts.
And so I'm not even gonna be mad at them, because
the cats don't care. My
dogs would come. Well, actually, no, because I have a gate up. Because guess what? I know that I'm gonna be distracted, and more than anything, you're gonna be distracted, because now everybody has to stop and say, "Oh, look at the kids. And not to belabor this point, but I also think it's important, especially as people of color, for others to understand this too. There's also a level of privilege that comes with that, because we as individuals who are 9 times out of 10, we potentially may need our job more than our white counterparts. Yeah. We may not have the same situation as our white counterparts. Yep. We are not going, and we are not taught to even do those certain things or feel comfortable enough to do those certain things.
Absolutely.
So that is where the privilege comes in, that you feel comfortable enough to be washing your hair.
Bless.
Bringing your kids. You know how many Black moms I know that were working on Zoom, and their kids were literally right behind them, and they said, "You better not breathe during this meeting."
Correct.
You know, and you're sitting here with all three of yours in your lap, smiling.
Right. Right.
You know, I think
I had an interview recently where a girl had her roommates in the rooms. Like, I'd ask questions, and they'd be answering. And I'm like, babes, I appreciate their enthusiasm, but if you could ask them to leave the room, that would be great. Obviously, I didn't move her forward because it was the most chaotic interview. I'm very certain old girl White was very much hungover.
Honey. And that's the privilege that I'm speaking of. It's the reality that you can even think to have
five people in a room with you, your cat, and be hungover. Because baby was definitely hungover. She had her little coffee cup up, and she was. I was like, "How you doing? How are you today?" She's like, "I'm tired." I was like, "All right. I see what kind of party this is."
I don't know if I could ever go into an interview, even if I hadn't slept for 24 hours, and actually say I'm tired.
Never, in life. I mean, the only time I told the truth, like my manager was like, you know, "Oh, how are you doing?" I was like, "Not good." But then, you know, my dad and brother had just died back to back, so I was not good, and I was tired. I was actually tired. And these check-in meetings to me were like not the best use of my time. Mm-hmm. I wanted to spend my time laid out on the couch. That's what I wanted to do, yeah. But I couldn't do that because I had to work. And even then, I still had to. I came in, had my
that's
good,
right,
my, mm-hmm. my good shirt on. I, you know, put the scarf on if the hair was wilding. Let me show my jewelries was on. Everything was cute. But babes, I was dead inside. And that was the one time I let the gate down. Yeah, I just was like,
that's the privilege. This. We would never mm-hmm. think to say, you know, I need a mental health day. You know, right. All of this is
we always teach ourselves to push through it, which is to our detriment. Which is to our detriment, honestly. Yes.
But we're not taught that, you know. My two, you know, boomer parents, mm-hmm. who, you know, come from the generation of working hard and do what you got to do so that you can retire and get a pension. Mm-hmm. They still lose their mind when, you know, it would come to you get to work from home down here. Yeah, uh-huh. That's how it goes, boo. Like they don't got
they don't
cameras
get it.
In my living room asking me where I'm signing in.
Like, right. Right. You know? And there are companies that do that are really tracking people, and they can go straight to hell. But like, when we decided to go out on our own and do our own thing, my mom was like verklempt. She was like, "But what are you going to do for money?" I was like, "Work."
Exactly.
We're going to work. We're still going to work. We have clients, you know, we're going to be okay. Of course, there's like peaks and valleys, which is why I took that gig that I took for that time right before COVID. But you know, you do what you got to do till you do what you want to do.
Exactly.
And they kind of don't, the doing what you want to do don't come for them until they're old. And
we are off that. I'm going to try to do everything that I can now, which, you know, shout outs to everyone who's working a full-time job and still pursuing their dreams.
Amen.
You know, doing their entrepreneur thing, because you can be an entrepreneur and also work a corporate job
if
you have the bandwidth. Smart and use that corporate money to pour into your entrepreneurial and, you know, venture.
Mm-hmm.
But
help that
path.
Let that shit help build you. Like you're learning things while you're in there. Some of that stuff shows up.
House of Flash and the Luxury Experience will at some point be on best employer, top employer list. Because if there's one thing that I've got from all of my work experience, it's how to treat people, retain people, and keep people. Okay.
So if you work for me,
you can at least at minimum guarantee that you are going to be treated with dignity and respect.
Because not for nothing, you learn exactly what you don't want working in these spaces. And that's the thing for me too. Like we're still a two-man shop, but if we get to the point where we have employees, which will probably come sooner rather than later, we know exactly what kind of culture we want to create for them. And we know how to be realistic about what people need to be treated as human people in a workplace. Because that's the thing that always gets lost in translation, where, you know, they treat everybody like they're all robots and you could just always produce.
Yeah.
And because you are available, you could be available 24 hours a day, people expect you to be. And baby, let me tell you about my boundary. 5 o'clock, babes.
It's okay. And you know,
I'm available from what hours? From 9 to 5.
Honey, and you know, I try to be flexible because, like, for me, I'm like, what is it that I'm potentially going to do? Like, my thing is catch me when I'm most productive, right?
Right.
So if I wake up at 12 o'clock at night and I got an idea and I can flesh it through and do it, I'm the type that'll schedule it to be emailed to you at 8 a.m. mm-hmm. and let you know I was doing this from 12 to 7 and I'm going to take the rest of the day and just email me if you have questions, we'll reconvene tomorrow.
That's it.
And there is no problem with that. The problem comes when it's like, again, well, we've never done it that way. Mm-hmm. Cool, you didn't. Let's try it out now. Did it work? Did you get the end result? Is the output what we were looking for?
Did you get what you wanted? All the time,
I don't care how you get to two, whether you want to do addition or multiplication.
Right.
As long as if I say I need 2 by 3 o'clock, I got 2. Knock yourself out.
Right. I don't really care how it gets done.
At all. You know.
And that's the problem too. People want to control how people produce.
And that is the biggest problem.
And that's also why there's been such pushback on employees trying to control their schedules in their own time. Which is the reason why the corporates was like, oh, really? We'll take this whole goddamn economy down to the garbage if that's what y'all want to do. Because if you're not in the office watching me flex in my corner office, did I really work? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, people, you need to be realistic about people's capabilities and how they work, how they learn, how things get produced. It's not going to be a 9 to 5. 9 to 5 is a joke, to be honest. Like, some people,
it really is.
They need more flexibility. And sometimes, correct, I am much more productive at certain times. But there are other things that are like of no consequence that I will happily wait till tomorrow morning to deal with.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like, and can be waited for. Don't come in my inbox.
Don't be texting me. This is not that time sensitive.
No, I am There's a human no resources professional. What do you think this is? Don't text me about somebody's resume. I'm off the clock, beloved. Right.
Or so-and-so's resignation. Okay, well,
they'll still have resigned tomorrow, right?
Right. Do you think I'm gonna get them to stop at 9 o'clock at night? I don't think I think if anything, they're probably really gonna be done.
Right.
If I call them at 9 o'clock.
Can you imagine?
Talk about, hey, I heard you resigned. You want to stay around a little longer?
Let's talk about retention. Bitch, get out of my face.
Right. Why the fuck I'm leaving?
Exactly. But as always, at Mostly Max and Other Things, we've gotten into the other things. So let's get back on task.
It was so on brand.
You know the vibes. So my last question, what is the best job you've ever had?
Everything that I'm doing right now. I love being a designer, but truthfully, even more than designing, I love styling and creating. And I'm a very huge visual person. So anytime that I can visibly see the fruits of my labor, that is what brings me the most joy. Anytime where I have a challenge and I need to put stuff together and come up with a vision and then execute it, that is like the ultimate experience for me. So right now in this season, you know, having folks want, you know, either having a entire clothing line or a collection and working, you know, on it from scratch and then seeing it on an individual, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's crazy for me. Or someone saying, I want a custom piece, but I don't know what I want it to look like, and designing that and going from a sketch to actuality, like, that's amazing. And helping people just look beautiful and feel good. Like, again, I'm all about, which is how we got to our tangent, people are about people. Mm-hmm. I'm all about how people feel. And right. I'm all about, you know, that expression, people won't always remember what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
Absolutely.
If we can create more moments where, no matter how long it is and no matter what the details were, we can remember that feeling we felt when I wore this outfit to this event, it's or, true. You know, I made this purchase. Those are the things that, you know, keep us going when we don't even know that we need it.
It's so true. It's absolutely true. It's amazing how, like, it doesn't even have to be like a big thing. Like, there was a point where, you know, it was like a struggle or whatever. Coins wise, we were in the valley in the business, and I got into lippies. I started buying a shit ton of cheap lippies and setting out these lips for the people, and because I don't have, you know, makeup skills, so I would put on my little lippies. It would feel like I tried, and you know, I had like a 20-year search for the perfect red, and then I found like 7 or 8 perfect reds. You know what I'm saying? And those little things just made me feel better while things were like looking bleak. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I just did my little things. Like, it doesn't have to even be huge. It could just be something to bolster your energy for a little bit. You know, like, I was feeling, like, of late, when it was like, yeah, I've been out here giving full Boogie Wolf out in these streets. Like, I need to do better. So it was like, you know, let me, at the most, put together an outfit that I know is cute. And, you know, like,
right.
where I know that I'm serving. It, like, it doesn't even have to be anything big. Like, everything is just going just right, and the jacket is doing what I need to jack. The jacket is jacketing, the skin is skinning. You know what I'm saying? The lip is
for
looking.
The moment, for yes. that moment.
And you yes. feel really, really good. And also, yes. I always know when I'm doing it, when a Black lady's like, girl, you did that. I'm
okay, like, yes.
When the yes. sisters tell you, you know you did that. And not yes. for nothing, when dudes tell you, and not on no bullshit. Like, I was out the other day, and I had, like, a whole bunch of, like, I had, like, this leopard print, because I'm very 90s in that way. I will match my kick to my top, a little
bit. Listen, we love, you it. Know, well, you know I live for monochromatic.
Yes, sir. I
full
love
newspaper look today, okay?
Yes, yeah, like, let's do this, and I put my little camel coat on. You can tell me shit. And this dude on, she was like, I really like your outfit. That is really nice. I was like, thank you.
and you can, you'll always remember that. You'll potentially look at the jacket again or look at the suit again and go, remember that day? You know, that is what I love the most about all of this. All of the other things are just gravy.
I know, that's right. Well, that was it. We made it to the end. Woo, you made it.
So much fun. So much fun.
I'm glad. So what do you, tell the people where they can find you and what are you working on?
Absolutely. Well, you can follow me on Instagram. This is going to be a couple of things. Everyone makes fun of me because I have three, but it's fine. So my main page, my personal page is LUXU_RAY. So that's Luxuray on Instagram. Also, you can follow me through the same handle on Twitter and on TikTok. Also, you can follow Luxuray's House of Flash. That's where you'll see all of my clothing pieces, everything from my line, including my recent runway show in New York Fashion Week.
Which and I then, saw. Snaps to that.
Yes, so I still can't believe that that happened. And then there's the Luxuray Experience on Instagram as well, where, again, you'll see all of the other side of the house. So personal styling, styling tips, shopping tips, and all things luxury that you can think of.
I love it. And I just want to say that I am so proud of you. It's always does my heart good when I see you out here doing it on these internets and just living your best life. And that's just aspirational. I love it. I love it so much.
Well, I want to say thank you for having me and always being a huge supporter from day one. You already know how I feel about you. One of my absolute favorites. Aww. And my one of my, as I always tell people, one of my favorite Live is Fives that I've ever met in my entire life. So I just want to say thank you so much. I truly appreciate the opportunity and the platform just to tell people a little bit more about, you know, who I am and what's going on.
Of course. I always bring my faves on here. So you already know the vibes. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And that was my discussion with the fabulous, supremely talented, go-getter, fashion icon in the making, Raymone / Luxuray. I hope you guys enjoyed, because I had a ball. Now, let's get in to these key takeaways. This week's key takeaway is, first they come for them, and then they come for you. By this, I'm talking about the GOP dickholes in Montana, wanting to get into the who can be the most terrible competition, banned trans state rep Zoe Zephyr from the floor and the gallery of the Montana House of Representatives for the remainder of the legislative session. And she'll only be able to participate via Zoom after Republicans today voted to punish her for what they said were her breaches of decorum and house rules. You know what her transgression was? Being trans and calling a thing a thing. She told them motherfuckers that they would have blood on their hands if they supported a Senate Bill 99, which would ban gender-affirming care for minors, if signed by Republican dickhole Greg Gianforte. So, like, she would know how detrimental that would be. No? Anyhow, they literally disappeared her because it's harder to pass laws against people like her when they are there to speak up for themselves. Bunch of bitch ass, bitch made bitches. Because wild buns. I would call them pussy, but that's disrespectful to pussies. Anyhow, for those of you who get real conservative when it comes to these matters, especially other gay people and queer people, don't think you're immune, babes, because you're not one of those people. You're not that kind of gay. You're not that kind of black. You're not that kind of Asian. Babes, they can't tell you apart when it's time to dole out the oppression, okay? Some of y'all are committed to obtaining shit for you and you alone, and that's not how it works. Everybody's struggle is all tied up together, and crewing up together for battle is the only way to win. But y'all don't hear me, though. Once more, for the bitches in the back in the cheap seats, ain't nobody free till everybody's free. And that's word to Brother Belafonte. And that's it for this week's episode of Mostly Max and Other Things. As always, keep washing your hands, keep your Purell on decky, because the pandemic na stop. Get the good masks. People out here raw face like a motherfucker. I feel crazy when I wear my mask, but you know what? I'm gonna keep wearing it. Fuck y'all. Purell your shit. Lysol your shit. Wash your ass. It's gonna get warm at some point. And don't nobody need to know that you ain't wash your shit. Wash your ass. And as always, take care of yourself. And keep taking care of others. And I will be back, maybe, next week. Also, as an addendum, Mama is breaking out to Bali for a month, starting at the end of May. So please understand there'll be no episodes in June. Maybe a little voice thing. Maybe I'll do some, like, content on the IG. Stay tuned. But, Mama's not doing no shows for the whole month of June. Because I'm going to be frolicking in Indonesia. And yeah, so jealous me. And I'll see y'all next week, possibly.